Now titles appear in red letters against a black background. Rippling white lines spread across the screen like crackling ice. They transform into swirling clouds of mist and finally a snowy white feather. Hollywood Pictures presents an Oliver Stone production in association with Ronald Bass, Amy Tan, and Wayne Wang.
The old woman remembered a swan she had bought many years ago in Shanghai for a foolish sum. This bird, boasted the market vendor, was once a duck that stretched its neck in hopes of becoming a goose. And now look, it is too beautiful to eat.
A film by Wayne Wang, The Joy Luck Club, with Tai Chin, Q Chin, Lisa Liu, and France Nguyen.
Then the woman and the swan sailed across an ocean many thousands of li wide, stretching their necks toward America.
Also starring Rosalind Zhao, Lauren Tam, Tamlin Tomita, and Ming-Na Wan.
On her journey, she cooed to the swan, "In America, I will have a daughter just like me. But over there, nobody will say her worth is measured by the loudness of her husband's belch."
Casting by Heidi Levitt in association with Risa Bremen Garcia.
"Over there, nobody will look down on her, because I will make her speak only perfect American English."
Music by Rachel Portman, edited by Maisie Hoy. Production designer, Donald Graham Burt.
"And over there, she will always be too full to swallow any sorrow."
Director of Photography, Amir Mokri. Executive producers, Oliver Stone and Janet Yang.
"She will know my meaning because I will give her this swan, a creature that became more than what was hoped for."
Based upon the novel by Amy Tan. Screenplay by Amy Tan and Ronald Bass. Produced by Wayne Wang, Amy Tan, Ronald Bass, and Patrick Markey.
But when she arrived in the new country, the immigration officials pulled the swan away from her, leaving the woman fluttering her arms and with only one swan feather for a memory.
With Michael Paul Chan, Andrew McCarthy, Christopher Rich, Russell Wong, and Vivian Wu.
For a long time now, the woman had wanted to give her daughter the single swan feather and tell her, "This feather may look worthless, but it comes from afar and carries with it all my good intentions."
Directed by Wayne Wang. Now a young Chinese woman greets guests at a party. Our view glides across a crowded living room. Three Chinese men in their 50s huddle in a corner, sipping drinks and talking. Ken, a young man with fashionably long hair, watches a football game on TV with a group of friends. June, the young woman, hugs a roly-poly older man with a graying beard, then giggles at the football fans as she passes by. She walks into the dining room where several well-dressed young Asian women sit around the table. She grins at Waverly, a model beautiful woman in her 30s, and slips into the kitchen. Three older women sit around the table slicing vegetables.
Dad,
that smells good.
Thanks.
June looks up from the stove and smiles.
I can't believe they're still arguing.
Waverly and one of the other young women rush in and stand next to their mothers. Waverly hands a camera to June's father. A third young woman joins them. June smiles politely and shakes her head. Her father pushes her forward. Standing alone, June watches with a wistful smile as her friends primp their mothers for the picture. Waverly straightens her mom's chin-length bob.
All right, let me check your hair. Okay, looks nice. Now smile naturally, Ma.
I always do, Waverly.
You don't do
that. Lena, a slim girl with a shy smile, leans over her fashionably dressed mother. Rose, a tall, wide-eyed young woman, hugs her mother, who smiles with quiet grace. Now, carrying a game case under her arm, Waverly's mother leads June into a small den. Lena and Rose's mothers follow, carrying a teapot and cups.
Yin, take this.
She hands Lena's mother the case. Wearing a hesitant frown, June stands by as the women take their places around three sides of a small card table.
My mother died 4 months ago. I realized for the first time they wanted me to take my mother's place. So I sat down on the east, where things begin, with my mother's best friends.
June smiles and takes the fourth seat. Each wearing jewelry made of jade, the women put their hands in the middle of the table and scramble a pile of mahjong tiles.
My mother started the Joy Luck Club having met all these women in church. Auntie Ame.
Rose's mother.
Auntie Lindo.
Waverly's mother.
Auntie Ying Ying.
Lena's mom.
For 30 years, these women feasted, forgot past wrongs, laughed and played, lost and won, and told the best stories. Each week they hoped to be lucky, and that hope was their only joy.
Lindo studies her row of tiles.
Their connection with each other had more to do with hope than joy or luck.
Scowling, she returns one to the pile. Anmei smiles at June.
You win like your mother?
I only played once with some Jewish friends in college.
Jewish mahjong. Not the same thing. Entirely different. Now, Chinese mahjong, very tricky. You have to watch what everybody throw out. And you keep all this in your head.
And if nobody play well, then the game is just like Jewish mahjong. No strategy. You American girls think Chinese, Jewish, what's the difference?
They were worried. In me, they see their own daughters, just as ignorant of all the hopes and dreams our mothers brought to this country.
Anmei beams with excitement and reveals her tiles. The others shake their heads in mock frustration.
No talking in Chinese. How do I know you're not cheating?
We don't know. We're not.
You don't know, but we are your auntie, and we are very honest people. We will not cheat you.
June stands up to pour herself another cup of tea and pauses in front of a piano.
Hey, June, why you not take the piano home? You only one who play.
Now a flashback to June as a little girl.
When I was 9 years old, my mother's version of believing in me was believing that I could be anything, anything she wanted. The best piano prodigy this side of China. I never practiced. Lucky for me, old Mr. Chung couldn't tell the difference. He'd gone stone deaf over the years.
The roly-poly man from the party frowns and bends closer to the piano, his head cocked to one side as he strains to listen.
Me and Beethoven, we both hear it in our head.
The 9-year-old June stifles a laugh.
Okey-dokey. Now, how many shops? How many flats? What key are we in?
Z major.
What?
Z major.
Good.
She grins impishly.
Now, for the recital. More feeling. More gusto.
Later, at the recital, June stands backstage waiting her turn while a little girl in a silk Chinese dress faces a full auditorium. Lindo sits in the audience next to a woman with softly curled hair.
When I was young, Auntie Lindo was my mother's best friend and arch enemy. Their weapons of choice were comparing their children. Mom was sick of hearing Auntie Lindo brag about her daughter Waverly, who is Chinatown's chess champion. That night, Mom figured I'd redeem her with my international piano debut.
I asked my daughter, help me carry groceries. She think this too much ask. All day long, she play chess. I dust off all her trophy. Appreciate me, no. You lucky you don't have the same problem.
My problem?
worse than yours. If I tell Chun Tam to wash dish, she hear nothing but music. It's like you can't stop this natural talent.
The two friends exchange forced, sympathetic smiles. Wearing a lacy pink dress, June takes a nervous breath and walks on stage. She grins at her parents, who sit in front of Old Chung. Lindo applauds reluctantly, while young Waverly sulks beside her.
Until that night, I didn't believe I was a prodigy.
Waverly rolls her eyes. June glares at her from stage.
Twerp.
Lips pressed together in a defiant frown, June takes her seat at the piano. Her parents beam at her with expectant smiles.
In fact, I used to go out of my way to prove my mother wrong, that I wasn't cut out to be the best anything. I could only be me. It was incredible. It was like my hands were possessed by Mozart. And everybody could see this, could hear this. I was a genius. I had been discovered. And then I heard it.
June's mother tenses, her brow creased in a worried frown. Beside her, Lindo hides a smile. Old Chong listens with a proud, blissful smile. Waverly smirks.
Maybe they didn't notice.
Bravo! Bravo! Encore! Well done!
Chong leaps to his feet, then notices everyone staring. June's mother looks up with a grim frown. Later, June sits in front of the TV.
Here we come. Walk down the street.
After the talent show fiasco, I figured I never had to play the piano again.
4 o'clock. Turn off TV. Practice piano time.
I couldn't believe what she was saying. Like I was supposed to go through the same torture again. Forget it.
What'd I say? 4 o'clock.
I'm not going to play anymore. Why should I?
What did you say?
I'm not your slave. This isn't China. You can't make me.
Get out!
No!
June struggles as Suyan drags her toward the piano.
No! No, I won't! The kind of daughter that you want me to be.
Two kinds of daughter. Obedient or follow own mind. Only one kind of daughter could live in this house. Obedient kind.
Then I wish I wasn't your daughter. I wish you weren't my mom.
Suyan shakes her head sadly.
Too late to change this.
That's when I remembered what we could never talk about.
Then I wish I were dead. Like them, the babies that you killed in China.
Her mother eyes widen in hurt and shock.
My mother had once told me this strange story, what happened to her in China. She said she was going to Chongqing to meet the man who was her husband. That was the first time I ever heard she was married before my father. She barely had time to grab her babies, twin girls. That was the first time I heard she had other babies.
In a flashback, Suyan pushes her babies in a wheelbarrow with hundreds of other refugees fleeing down a muddy road.
I always try to picture in my mind what really happened. But she would never explain. She would only say by the time she reached Chongqing, she had lost everything. And I said, wait, what do you mean everything? What happened to those babies?
She lays her children at the base of a tree.
There were so many things about my mother I never understood. This is the only one I never forgave.
A recent flashback, Lindo.
The babies. You know, two babies?
The babies? We all thought that the babies had died. But last month at a church picnic...
Two babies your mother leave on the roadside? In wartime? It's a miracle. But we find them. Yes. Can you imagine? They're still alive.
What are you saying? They're alive?
I think your mother always wanted to find them. Her long-cherished wish. So after she died, we tried for her. Writing, writing, writing.
Lindo snatches the letter and hands it to June.
This is from them. Those babies.
Ah, no baby anymore.
They're alive. Oh, what does it say? What does it mean?
Lindo reads the Chinese characters.
It say, see here? They are very glad. No. Overjoyed beyond belief. At last find you, their little sister.
She shoots an uneasy glance at Anmei and Yingying, who stare at her reproachfully.
And they say, see here? How sad, how very sad. Too late to meet their mother. Now she no longer in this world. Yes, yes. It says, see here? You must come to China and meet them and tell them all about their mother.
What could I tell them? I didn't know anything about her.
Your
mother is her fault.
How kind she was. Everyone loves her.
How sincere, how hardworking she was.
And the excellent dishes she cooked.
Even better than mine.
And how beautiful she sang. Don't you remember?
How can a daughter not know her own mother?
You're right. I will tell them. I should. I want to.
She smiles hesitantly. Her aunts nod with somber approval. Now at the party.
June? What are you thinking?
Those babies, of course. The twins. Can't believe I'm actually going to meet them.
June resumes her place at the card table and arranges her mahjong tiles in a row.
How sad they must have been when you told them Mom died.
Lindo avoids her gaze.
That must have been the hardest letter for you to write.
Anmei shares a look with Yingying.
Oh, peanut bowl empty.
Oh, I'll get us some.
Anmei scowls at Lindo.
你怎么可以呢? All this time never telling her the truth. Must tell her today. How can you not tell her?
How can I tell her what the letter really say? That she never go to China? Never go to see her sister? Am I right? Yes, of course.
Lindo, I still think it's wrong.
Lindo looks from one friend to the other, then bows her head with a deep, troubled sigh. She toys absent-mindedly with her jade necklace.
It's so sad for those babies. How could Su Yun give them up? To lose a mother so young. To wonder why. Even to this day I wonder how my own mother could give me up.
Now, in a rural village, we see Lindo as a chubby-cheeked little girl trailing a red kite.
That day, when I was only 4 years old, I came upon a meeting that would change my life forever.
Come here, quick. Come here. Wang Taitai, this is my daughter. Come here, Lindo. Come over here.
Lindo shakes her head.
Come to Mama. Don't keep Wang Taitai waiting. She looks like a brat. She's usually very obedient. She's just shy today.
I didn't know it. But that day, my mother made a promise that when I became 15, I would go live in this woman's house.
She looks so skinny. Don't go by her looks. Look at that lucky face. She'll give you many grandsons.
And fulfill the old matchmaker's guarantee to have many sons. With a husband I had never met before.
Lindo's pretty young mother bows her head in shame at her daughter's reproachful pout. Lindo throws down her kite and walks away. Later, they eat by candlelight.
Stop stuffing yourself. No girl should eat so fast.
Lindo's mother transfers vegetables from her rice bowl to her little girls.
For the next 10 years, my mother treated me as if I already belonged to Wong Tai Tai.
Now a teenage Lindo eats rice with a pair of chopsticks. Her mother gives her more of her vegetables.
Look at those dirty spots.
She gently rubs a spot on Lindo's cheek.
Who would want such a dirty daughter-in-law? Always be careful. Otherwise, when you go to Wang Tai Tai's, she will disapprove of you.
My mother did not say these things because she didn't love me. She said these things so she would not wish for something that was no longer hers.
Lindo's mother tenderly strokes Lindo's long braided hair. The young girl gazes at her with teary, reproachful eyes. Her mother presses her lips together, then bows her head sadly. She lifts a morsel of rice to her lips with a pair of wooden chopsticks, peering meekly at her daughter over the rim of the porcelain bowl. Morning. A misty veil shrouds the rough, windowless stone cottage with its crumbling walls and dirt floors.
And then one day, my mother said our whole family was moving to the south. Everyone. Except me.
Lindo walks hand in hand with her mother, followed by two little boys and a man pulling a wooden cart loaded with a small pile of belongings. They stop in the middle of a field. Thin, gnarled trees rise from the barren landscape, stark silhouettes against the gray mist. Two men wait by a pedicab several yards away. Choking back tears, Lindo bows her head as her mother lovingly fastens a gold chain with a jade pendant around her neck.
Remember, when you see Wang Tai Tai, act happy. Really. You are very lucky.
Lips trembling, she gently tucks one of Lindo's braids over her shoulder. Lindo gazes at her with beseeching eyes, tears streaming down her cheeks. Lindo's mother takes her hand and forces herself to stride toward the waiting driver. Lindo follows with dragging steps. When they reach the pedicab, Lindo's mother takes her daughter's hand and places it against her cheek, then bows her head and wrenches herself away. Lindo tries to hold on. The pedicab driver takes her gently by the elbow. Lindo's mother hurries back toward the rest of her family. She hesitates once, then runs to the rickety, moss-covered wagon and starts to push. Sobbing, she takes her son's hand, finally allowing herself to look back. Now in a courtyard draped with banners of red silk, wearing a red and gold brocade tunic and a square of red silk draped over her head, Lindo shuffles in, guided by an elderly servant. The red-lipped matchmaker speaks from a podium.
The marriage ceremony has begun. Bride and groom pay respect to each other.
Lindo bows beneath her veil.
Pay respect to the ancestors.
She bows to a painting of an old man.
Be blessed with prosperity. Be blessed with many sons.
We see the hands of Lindo and her new husband as they each take one end of a red ribbon. Later, Lindo pulls the veil off of her head, revealing a jeweled cap draped with strings of hanging beads. She scans the opulent bedroom, suffused with soft golden light.
That night, I would meet my husband for the first time. The one who would control my destiny. Decide whether I was happy or not.
With the beads dangling in front of her face, Lindo wanders toward a window. She cowers as blue lightning explodes outside.
This one moment would decide for my whole life whether fear would rule or I would. I decided. Underneath, I knew who I was. I promised myself never to forget.
Lindo raises her chin and defiantly faces the storm. She hurries back to her seat at the foot of the canopied bed and quickly pulls the veil over her head, droopy and lopsided. Lindo folds her hands in her lap and tries to look dignified. She leans forward and peeks toward the door. A man's feet approach with imperious, unhurried strides. Lindo leans back and modestly bows her head. Wearing a long brown silk robe, he stops directly in front of Lindo.
I have prayed to the gods many days for you, so that you were not too ugly or too old.
Lindo rips off her veil and sees a chubby 11-year-old boy.
I must have prayed too hard.
He holds up a green lizard.
Ha! Scared you to death!
The matchmaker and her friend eavesdrop outside. Later, wearing pajamas, Lindo and her husband stare at each other. I am the husband. I make all the decisions. You sleep on the floor. He tosses her a pillow. Do it. Do it now. Later, Lindo lies on the floor at the foot of the bed, staring into space with a sullen pout. The lizard scrambles across the wooden floor and gapes at her. She grins with smug satisfaction as the lizard scuttles away. Drumming her fingers impatiently on the floor, Lindo sits up and sighs. Red lipstick paints a Cupid doll mouth in the middle of her lips.
The next few years, I tried to accept my life, to act like an obedient wife. Every night, I made Huang Tai Tai special soup, good for mother-in-laws. Still, she was not pleased.
Where are my grandsons? My son says you often refuse to sleep with him. What kind of a wife are you?
Later, her head bowed and eyes glued to the floor, Lindo shyly slips off her pajama top. The pudgy little boy nervously bites his fingernails and giggles as he stares at her naked body. You sleep on your side. He rolls over and lies on the opposite side of the bed, his back turned. Lindo pulls her top back on.
After that, I slept with my husband. Every night I slept with him. Just like brother and sister.
Lindo eyes a large, brown, hairy mole growing on the boy's back. Daytime, her servant brings her a bowl. Lindo smells its contents and grimaces. The stern-looking woman forces it to her lips just as Huang Tai Tai marches in.
Where are my grandsons, huh? My son says he's planted enough seeds in you to fill a basket. Plenty for 10,000 grandsons. It's all your fault. Always running around, letting my son's seeds spill out. From now on, you lie in bed all day. Lie down. Lie down. Until my grandson comes. Do you hear me? You disgusting little thing. Close all the windows.
A servant folds the red lacquered windows shut. Lindo lies in bed, seething, her body rigid. She sits up and scans the empty room, then climbs out and wanders disconsolately toward the window. Lips parted in a curious frown, Lindo licks her finger and rubs a spot clean on the dusty window. Outside, a servant girl sits with a young man in baggy clothes. She places his hand on her stomach.
Feel this. I'm pregnant.
That's impossible.
It's yours.
Lindo bows her head in thought, then grins. Now Lindo raises a knife with trembling hands and plunges it toward her stomach. She grimaces with each vicious slash, then drops the knife. Panting, Lindo examines the new rips in her shredded pajama top. She flips her long, silky, dark hair in front of her face and tousles it with her hands until it hangs in wild snarls. Outside, Huang Tai Tai sits with her son, the matchmaker, and her friend.
What did I tell you? She's like this all the time.
In her room, Lindo grins. Now Lindo flies into the foyer and falls to her knees, frantically bowing to the ancestor's painting. The others rush in.
What the hell's happening? What's wrong?
Huang Tai Tai grabs Lindo by the shoulder.
Tell me, quick. It's so scary. It's too terrible to say. I had a bad dream. Our ancestors came to me, so angry. They told me if Tian Yu stays in this marriage, he will die. What's this bullshit? What a stupid girl to have bad dreams. The ancestors said if the matter is not settled immediately, they will begin the cycle of destruction. There are three signs, he said. First, he has drawn a spot on Tian Yu's back, and this spot will eat away Tian Yu's flesh, just as it ate away our ancestor's face.
The same mole I had seen during all those nights of sleeping just like brother and sister.
Lindo smirks.
Next, our ancestor touched my mouth. Our ancestor said, if I don't leave this marriage, all my teeth will fall out. But how could I leave this family I love so much? I live and die for this family.
She opens her mouth and shows Huang Tai Tai.
The open spot in my mouth where a rotted tooth fell out 4 years ago.
She points to the servant girl.
Our ancestor also said this girl here is Tian Yu's true spiritual wife, already growing his son. It's true. To prove it, our ancestor planted the seed in her womb. Already ripe in 1 day.
Ah
Ping, come over here. Come over here.
Nervously wringing her hands, Ah Ping goes to Huang Tai Tai, who places her hand on the girl's rounded belly. She stares at Lindo in astonishment.
If you don't believe me, ask the matchmaker.
The matchmaker had made the wrong match on purpose, just for money.
The elderly matchmaker bows her head. Still kneeling, Lindo peeks out from behind her hair as she pretends to sob. Huang Tai Tai marches over to the matchmaker.
Matchmaker, how could you? Mistakes happen in heaven. The hell with this! Get out! All of you!
Huang Tai Tai gently takes Ah Ping's arm.
Huang Tai Tai got her grandson. The servant girl got her marriage.
Still prostrate on the stone floor, Lindo peeks as everyone files out, then sits up with a radiant smile.
I got a rail ticket to Shanghai.
Now an older Lindo smiles over a cup of tea.
So you see, I still kept my promise to my mother. But years later, things were somewhat different with my daughter Waverly's wedding.
Where?
Uh-huh. It's me.
Oh, Waverly, you already at the beauty parlor?
No.
No?
No, I have a headache.
Headache?
You have a headache? So you cannot keep your promise to your mother?
Ma!
No, don't come. Why should I want you to come? When are you telling me you don't want to come?
Ma, that's not what I
What's
said.
What's wrong with the way I look now? I just go to wedding with old hair.
Shit! She always does this!
Later in a chic salon.
My mom always does this. Whatever I say, whatever I do, whatever I think. She always has the perfect counter move. As if she had been the chess champion.
Now a young Waverly sits at a chessboard.
Even at that age, I knew I had an amazing gift. This power. This belief in myself. To be better than anyone else. If someone was bigger than me, older than me, it didn't matter. And if they were mean, I could make them sorry.
Waverly's blonde opponent watches her with a smug grin. Waverly studies the board, then confidently moves her knight.
Checkmate.
She grins triumphantly, then glances at Lindo, who sighs with relief and joins the applause.
Congratulations. It was the only part of my life, to this day, where I trusted myself completely.
Later, holding hands, Lindo and Waverly leave the auditorium.
Thank you. Thank you.
I was safe there. I still cry. Remembering that.
Later, Lindo holds up a copy of Life.
You not see Life magazine?
No.
Waverly's on the cover.
I tell my daughter, use your horses to run over the enemy. She won very quickly this way.
Oh, good.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Say bye-bye.
Waverly rolls her eyes, then smiles wanly bye. At the storekeeper. Lindo leads her down the sidewalk.
Hi. Ah, oh, Mrs. Juni, huh? You know my daughter? Waverly Chong, chess champion.
Smart girl. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. I wish you wouldn't do that, telling everyone I'm your daughter.
What do you mean? You're so ashamed to be with your mother?
It's not that. It's just that so embarrassing.
What?
That's all.
Embarrassed you be my daughter?
That's not what I said.
Then what you say? Look at me. Look at me.
Waverly juts out her chin in defiance.
Why do you have to use me to show off? If you want to show off, then why don't you learn to play chess?
Lindo stares at her, furious and hurt. Waverly yanks her hand free and runs away down the sidewalk, dropping a pink pastry box. Later at home.
About time. Boy, are you in trouble.
Waverly shoves past her grinning brother and walks into the dining room.
Sit down. Eat.
She glances uncertainly at her mother.
This girl not have concerning for us. We not concerning this girl.
Waverly glares at Lindo, who keeps eating and refuses to look at her. She stomps to her room. She stares at her chess set. In the dining room, Waverly's parents pause. Her father puts down his chopsticks and frowns impassively. Lindo feigns disinterest as Waverly runs back in.
I'm never gonna play chess again. You can't make me. You can torture me all you want. I still won't.
Her father leans his head on his hand and studies Waverly with a puzzled frown. Lindo stares straight ahead and keeps eating. Waverly frowns in frustration and places her hands on her hips.
Did you hear what I said?
Lindo ignores her and continues to eat with slow, deliberate chews. Waverly's rebellious glare dissolves into a wounded pout. Blinking back tears, she stares at her mother, then turns and walks away. Another day. Waverly picks up a baseball glove, revealing one of her chess trophies hidden underneath.
For months, I kept expecting Ma to beg me to play chess again. But she never mentioned it, as if I had never played at all.
She watches her mother, who sits in the living room darning a sock. Lindo glances up as Waverly approaches her with a brave smile.
Guess what? I've decided to play chess again.
You think it is so easy? One day quit, next day play. Everything for you is this way. So smart, so easy, so fast.
Waverly bows her head and stares at the floor. Her mother breaks the thread, then stands up and walks away.
Not so easy anymore.
Later, at a tournament, the same blonde teenaged boy moves his queen and stops the timer clock with a triumphant grin.
What she said, it was like a curse. This power I had, this belief in myself, I could actually feel it draining away.
She makes a hesitant move.
I could feel myself becoming so ordinary. All the secrets I once saw, I couldn't see them anymore. All I could see were my mistakes, my weaknesses. The best part of me just...
Jack.
Disappeared.
Waverly aims a guilty look at her mother, who sits in the audience, frowning sadly.
But I can't put it all on my mother. I did it to myself.
She bows her head in shame.
I never played chess again.
Now in the salon.
She needs a cut and a perm, Trevor. And this color of hers is from that cheap black dye she's been using at home. God forbid she'd pay to have anything professionally done.
Why I should pay? What for? Why I should pay $90 to act like you? So important. Go to fancy barber with torn up jeans.
The fashionably scruffy Trevor smirks at Waverly.
Darlene, we need a shampoo here.
He cranks down the chair. Lindo's face sinks out of view.
I mean, I even married a Chinese guy to please her. He was gorgeous. He gave her a granddaughter. But was she satisfied? When we got divorced, she got all upset like it was my fault.
Later at Waverly's apartment.
I just want to show you something. It's upstairs.
And when I finally started dating again, when I tried to hint to her about Rich, that we were living together.
Lindo eyes her warily.
How could she not notice? This was not going to go away, even with her silent treatment.
Later, Waverly shrugs on a long fur coat.
This is what I wanted to show you.
She spins around.
You know Rich, the guy I told you about? I don't know why he got it for me. It's really never cold enough to wear. You want to try it?
Lindo holds it up and inspects the fur with a disapproving frown.
This is not so good. Only leftover strips. See? Fur too short. No long hairs.
She hands it back with a challenging stare.
How can you criticize a gift? He gave this to me with all his heart.
That's why I told you. Not so good.
I wasn't going to let her get away with it this time. Making me feel bad about Rich. The love of my life. Who treated me like I was perfect.
Well, aren't you going to say anything else?
What I should say?
About the apartment. About this.
A pile of men's shirts.
And this.
She holds up a handful of ties.
Or this.
Packets of condoms.
All of this!
She hurls everything into the air. A shirt lands on Lindo's head. Later, at Lindo's apartment, a 4-year-old girl trudges upstairs.
The next week, I brought Rich to Mom's birthday dinner. Sort of a surprise present. I figured she was going to have to accept Rich, like it or not.
Her parents come out to greet them.
Oh, Rich, this is my father.
How you doing?
Happy birthday, Mom.
I'm good.
And Ma, this is Rich.
Waverly takes a hopeful breath.
Great to meet you. Boy, something smells wonderful. I guess we came to the right place, huh? Here you are. You know, Waverly has been telling me that you are the best cook.
Lindo gazes up at the tall, freckled, blonde Rich with a polite smile, then shoots Waverly a level stare and walks away.
I think maybe we got her.
Waverly hurries over to her mother.
So many spots on his face.
Of course, the night was still young. Thank God I already prepped him on the Emily Post of Chinese manners.
Later, at dinner.
Actually, there were a few things I forgot to mention.
Everyone clinks glasses. Rich guzzles his wine.
Let me make a toast.
He shouldn't have had that second glass when everyone else had had only half an inch just for taste.
Everyone stares as Rich downs another drink.
Shrimp. My favorite.
He shovels food onto his plate.
He should have taken only a small spoonful of the best dish until everyone had had a helping.
He has good appetite.
Lindo arches her eyebrows. Waverly sighs.
He shouldn't have bragged he was a fast learner.
Rich fumbles with his chopsticks and flings a shrimp onto his tie.
But the worst was when Rich criticized my mother's cooking, and he didn't even know what he had done. As is the Chinese cook's custom, my mother always insults her own cooking, but only with the dishes she serves with special pride.
This dish not salty enough. No flavor. It's too bad to eat. But please.
She places the dish carefully in front of Rich, who takes a helping.
That was our cue to eat some and proclaim it the best she'd ever made.
You know, Linda, all this needs is a little soy sauce.
He drowns the entire dish in soy sauce. Lindo's mouth drops open in disbelief. Later in the car.
So, how'd your mom react when you told her about the wedding?
It never came up.
How come?
She'd rather get rectal cancer.
Oh.
In the salon.
Ah, soft way for body. What do you think? Look, she doesn't want it too short. Otherwise, it'll be too tight for the wedding. And we don't want it looking too weird or kinky. Isn't that right, Ma? Not too kinky?
Why does my daughter think she's translating English for me? Maybe I don't go.
What do you mean?
Maybe I don't go to your wedding.
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
Maybe already ridiculous. They're too ridiculous for future husband's family.
Lindo yanks off her earrings. Waverly pretends to strangle her when she isn't looking.
I could see her face looking at me, but not seeing me. She was ashamed. So ashamed to be my daughter.
Lindo starts to cry.
Mom? What's wrong?
Nothing. Nothing, Abby. I'm only thinking.
My mother, how much I wanted to be like her.
Your mother?
She told me all the hopes she had for me. Words I would never forget.
A flashback.
You're so lucky. You don't have ears like mine. You'll have a better life. But listen carefully to what is calling. Can you feel in your heart what I'm saying? Will you always keep it there?
Sitting in shadowy candlelight, a teenage Lindo weeps as her mother tenderly combs her hair.
You know, after today, I will never give you any more advice.
Lips trembling, her mother fights back tears.
In my memory, my mother is very important to me, just like her words. Easy to appreciate. Memory.
Standing at Lindo's shoulder, Waverly stares at her mother in the mirror. She crosses her arms defensively.
Mom? Why don't you like Rich?
Lindo looks up with a faint smile of surprise.
Is Rich you afraid I not like? If I don't like him, Rich, I act polite, say nothing. Let him have big cancer. Let my daughter be a widow. I like Rich, of course I do. To allow him to marry such a daughter.
Waverly meets her mother's gaze in the mirror. Her face crumbles into tears.
You don't know. You don't know the power you have over me. One word from you, one look, and I'm 4 years old again, crying myself to sleep. Because nothing I do can ever, ever please you.
Eyes brimming with tears, Lindo starts to smile. The beautiful, sophisticated Waverly chokes back her sobs and gazes pleadingly at her mother's reflection.
Now. Now you make me happy.
Lindo collapses in relief. Caught between laughter and tears, Waverly grins and wraps her arms around her mother's shoulders. Now at the party, Lindo emerges from her reverie with a soft smile.
Look, Ma, Andy Ying, I did it.
Rich holds up his chopsticks and drops food into his lap. Lindo slaps him playfully.
God, I can't take you anywhere.
So where did it end up?
June passes plates at the dining room table. Lindo brings out a platter of steamed fish.
Ta-da!
She starts to load June's plate. June tries to stop her.
What's the matter? Guest of honor?
Yeah.
Should eat more. Should eat more. Too skinny.
Well, I thought you said I was getting fat.
Auntie Anne said that. Why are you always confusing us?
Look, June's so happy going to China. See her sisters at last.
Only steamed. Can't get you fat.
Ying Ying and Anmei look on with affectionate smiles.
How terrible for Su Yuan. To lose your babies, never know if they are alive or dead.
Ying Ying's smile fades into a deep, troubled frown. Fighting back tears, she turns away.
Only one thing's worse.
The chic, elegant Ying Ying wanders away from the crowd and leans wearily against a door jamb. In a flashback, we see her as a beautiful young girl sitting with two of her friends.
I was only 16.
She takes a demure sip of tea while her friends stare at a trio of young men.
Stop looking.
Ying Ying watches with wide, fascinated eyes, then modestly lowers her gaze. A broad-shouldered, strikingly handsome young man leers at her.
Ying Ying.
Ying Ying ignores him.
Ying Ying.
She stares straight ahead and takes another sip of tea. The young man grins, then picks up a cleaver and holds it over a watermelon. Open the watermelon! Ying Ying gapes as the young man tears out a fistful of the glistening red pulp. Juice dribbles from his hand. Keeping his eyes glued on her, he runs his tongue sensuously over the flesh. Ying Ying blushes.
Dog fart.
The young man grins and turns away. Ying Ying watches him with a dreamy, mesmerized smile. Later, he escorts her into a sparkling ballroom. Several women approach the young man, brazenly stroking his cheek and touching his arm. Men eagerly shake his hand. Wearing a shy, hesitant smile, Ying Ying gazes adoringly at him as he saunters confidently through the crowd. She wears a white xiangsam, a long, slim dress with a slit up one leg. He wears a dark, double-breasted suit. A band plays on a small stage while couples sway across the dance floor. Standing inches apart, Ying Ying and the young man gaze into each other's eyes, their faces glowing in the soft golden light. The young man bends to kiss her, then slowly brushes his lips up to her forehead. Ying Ying gazes at him, her lips trembling. The young man leads Ying Ying onto the dance floor and gathers her in his arms. Without taking their eyes off each other, they start to dance. He spins her out, then reels her back into his embrace. The young man holds her at arm's length, then suddenly grabs her around the waist. Ying Ying follows his lead, pliant in his arms. He places his hand behind her back and lowers her down in a slow, sensuous dip. Ying Ying arches her back and closes her eyes in ecstasy as he trails his lips slowly down her neck and chest. Later, on stage, in the dark, deserted ballroom, the young man, his coat off, strokes Ying Ying's cheek tenderly and lowers his mouth onto hers. He slips off his suspenders, then raises Ying Ying's skirt. She straddles him, her legs wrapped around his thighs. From across the empty room, we see the young man pin Ying Ying against the wall, painted with a rugged, mountainous landscape.
After that, everything like this dream. Our wedding. Our son.
Now at a party. In an elegant courtyard, Ying Ying smiles stiffly at her guests while a servant holds a plump-cheeked baby wearing a red silk robe and ornate hat. Across the courtyard, Ying Ying's husband whispers to a young woman with heavy makeup and sparkling earrings, running his finger inside her plunging neckline. Ying Ying watches him, her eyes blazing with anger. Honored guests, thank you for coming. I persuaded the famous diva Ms. Bai Yan to sing in honor of my son.
There he was, with his opera singer. This was not his first conquest. Only the first I permitted myself to recognize. By then I knew what kind of man I had married. Happiest when he was cruel.
Ying Ying tears her gaze away and takes her baby from the servant's arms. Chin high, she stalks away with forced calm. Later, she sits alone at a dining table loaded with untouched food. She stops the servant who comes to comfort the baby.
Let me have him.
She cradles her son in her arms.
He became forgetful.
Another day, a servant tries to clear the table.
Don't touch it. So forgetful, he had not returned by the next morning. Or the next evening.
Wearing the same dress from earlier in the day and her hair in long straggles, Ying Ying jumps up as the apartment door opens. Her husband staggers in with the opera singer.
Who's this?
This person is a whore, just like you. He nips her on the cheek. Then drags her toward his son's bassinet. Ying Ying gapes in horror. My son. My son. Listen to that voice. Strong, like his father. Ying Ying rushes to rescue her baby. Her husband shoves her savagely to the floor. Look at you. Disgusting. You make me sick. He takes his mistress's hand and leads her to the bedroom. Ying Ying fumbles for a plate and smashes it on the floor. She picks up a dagger-like shard and rushes toward him, then stops, trembling under his icy, contemptuous sneer. Clean up this mess. Ying Ying stands frozen. You hear me? She jumps back, her fury dissolving into fear. Ying Ying's husband stalks away with the opera singer in tow. Still clutching the plate shard like a knife, Ying Ying stumbles backward, staring at the closed bedroom door. Her knees buckle beneath her. She kneels, bowing her head over the broken plate, and fumbles to pick up the pieces. Sobs rack her slender shoulders.
my whole life turn in this moment. If I had left him or killed him, I would not have lost the one thing that mattered.
Later, her eyes blank with shock, Yingying kneels on the floor, giving her son a bath. She wipes him absently with a washcloth, her movements slow and mechanical. The baby smiles up at her with wide, curious eyes. Yingying stares into space, her mouth set in a straight, hard line.
My mind kept repeating a single thought. He had taken from me my innocence, my youth, my heart, everything.
Staring trance-like into space, Yingying lets her son slip from her hands. The baby sinks underwater, frantically kicking his legs.
So I took from him the only thing I could.
Yingying's eyes drift back to the baby. She jerks out of her trance, eyes wide with horror, and snatches her son out of the water. Trembling, Yingying clutches him to her chest. Her shoulders heave with panicky sobs.
My baby was so light in my arms because his little spirit had flown away. And with his, my spirit had also gone.
Yingying hugs her baby close, tenderly stroking his head. Now, a recent flashback in San Francisco. Yingying sits alone in an empty room in a catatonic daze.
Years later, I moved to America. But what I had done in China was always with me.
A teenaged girl tiptoes to the door.
In time, I remarried, and I had a daughter. But Lena had no spirit, because I had none to give her.
Mommy?
The slim, delicate Lena carries a breakfast tray to Yingying, who sits rigidly in her chair, wearing a bathrobe over her pajamas. Lena timidly offers her the food. Yingying stares past her, not moving or blinking. Lena lays the tray on the floor and wrings her hands, then gently straightens her mother's robe.
Mommy, please answer me.
She wipes the tears from Yingying's gently lined face, which is frozen in an expression of terror.
As I was growing up, there were times when Mom went through these bad spells. She often seemed scared and sad, but she would never talk about it, except to say that she had been married to a bad man in China.
Later, a 30-ish Lena and a tall man with horn-rimmed glasses lead Yingying up a metal staircase into a stark, modern house.
Over the years, Mom got better, although it seemed like all her fears turned into worries about me.
Yingying frowns at the gray metal walls.
So now that I'm married, and she's visiting our new house, I hope she can finally be happy for me.
Lena watches her mother with wide, apprehensive eyes. Wearing a chic gray shawl and a string of gunmetal gray beads around her neck, Yingying sits at the kitchen counter and lights a cigarette.
Don't worry, everything's fine.
Lena avoids her mother's appraising stare and skeptical frown.
He's very nice to me.
Nice. Very nice.
She walks over to the refrigerator.
Oh, Mom?
What's this?
Why don't you, rest in the living room. I'll make you some tea, okay? I've got some chrysanthemum tea.
Yingying returns to the handwritten lists.
What's this writing?
It's nothing. You know, it's just things we share. At least that's what Harold calls it. Sharing. everything 50-50, so our love is always equal. The irony is, I was the one who started it that way.
A flashback to a restaurant.
$41.
Oh, total?
Each. What? You don't have enough?
No, it's,
Lena smiles politely and counts her money.
Just, I was never very good at math.
So what if I had a salad and he had three courses? We were equals. Except that I work in his firm and he pays himself seven times more than he pays me. 7.5.
Now, Harold unpacks groceries.
And then last year, when we finally decided to get married, we agreed. Love, yes. False dependencies, no. With most everything, we keep track of what we spend, then split it 50-50. Of course, we agreed early on not to include personal stuff, like my tampons and feminine hygiene spray, and his shaving lotion and foot powder.
Honey, isn't there a generic brand of cat food? I mean, do they know the difference? For crying out loud.
34.76.
But we still have these philosophical arguments about the gray areas. Like magazines I subscribe to, which he reads, but only because they're there. And the cat. Even the goddamn cat's fleas.
You gave her to me as a birthday gift. And now you want me to pay to get rid of her fleas?
Lena fights back tears and hugs her orange tabby cat. Now she snaps out of her reminiscence as steam billows out of a silver kettle. Ying Ying stares at the list, which has headings that read Lena and Harold, beneath a logo for HJW Architects.
Ice cream you don't share. You don't need ice cream. Ever since that time you got sick on strawberry and chocolate flavor together, I remember. Now you must pay for half of his ice cream.
Lena ignores her as she makes the tea.
Why do you do this?
Lena.
The lean mustached Harold sits at the counter.
Lena, when you buy charcoal, you have to buy lighter fluid. Don't you know that yet? Do I have to remind you every time?
Lena cannot eat ice cream.
What?
He frowns quizzically at Lena.
What are we talking about?
It's true. I've hated ice cream all my life. I don't touch the stuff.
Well, I assumed you were always trying to diet or something.
Oh, yes. She's lost so much weight, you can't see her anymore.
Later, in a guest bedroom.
$1 million. And the walls are still cooking. It's bad luck.
Harold wanted to keep it that way for the effect.
For effect? A person has to lie here thinking she's in a coffin?
She bumps into a table, nearly toppling a vase.
It's not too dirty. Harold made it back in college.
Why do you keep it? You put one more thing on top and everything falls down.
Do you need anything else?
No.
Lena stalks out.
No, nothing.
Downstairs, Harold eats ice cream in front of the TV.
What is a drag race? No. What an idiot! Regatta, not drag race! I don't believe this guy.
It's cold.
Harold stares at her.
Excuse me?
I said, would you close the window, please? It's cold.
Harold presses his lips together in an irritated scowl and heaves himself off the couch. Lena swings her foot in agitation and stares as Harold returns to his TV and ice cream, ignoring her. She stalks into the dreary kitchen and rips the tally sheet off the refrigerator. Using lipstick, she draws a red line through Harold's ice cream, then balls it up and aims it at him.
Honey, move. What's going on?
I don't think you should get credit for your ice cream anymore.
Fine. You got it. End of discussion.
He cranes his neck to see around her. Lena throws herself into a chair.
Why do you have to be so goddamn fair?
Harold stares at her dubiously, then picks up a remote and turns off the television.
Just what is this about, exactly?
I don't know. Maybe everything. The way we account for everything, what we share, what we don't share, I'm sick of it. Adding things up, subtracting, making it come out even when it's not, I'm sick of it.
You're the one who wanted the cat!
What are you talking about?
All right. If you think I'm being unfair, we'll both pay for the fleas.
This is not about fleas. That is not the point.
Then please, tell me. What is the point?
Lena recoils from her husband's haughty sneer.
I just think that we need to change things. We need to think about what this marriage is based on. Not this balance sheet.
Well, I know what our marriage is based upon. And if you don't, then you better think about it before you start to change things.
Lips trembling, Lena submissively lowers her gaze. Upstairs, Ying Ying stands in the barren, shadowy bedroom, smoking.
All around this house, I see the signs. My daughter looks, but she does not see. This is a house that will break into pieces.
Flashbacks to her own violent marriage. The vase crashes to the floor.
Huh?
Water oozes slowly across the stone floor, engulfing the flower stalks and shards of glass. Ying Ying paces back and forth in the shadows, passing through a narrow column of sunlight that filters in through metal blinds. She takes a thoughtful drag on her cigarette, then crushes it under her foot.
It's not too late. All my pains, my regrets, I will gather them together.
Ying Ying clasps her hands and pauses at the window. She remembers her son smiling up at her from the bath.
My daughter will hear me calling, even though I've said no words.
Lena eases the door open.
She will climb the stairs to find me. She will be scared because at first her eyes will see nothing. She will feel in her heart this place where she hides her fears. She will know. I am waiting like a tiger in the trees. Now ready to leap out and cut a spirit loose.
Ying Ying moves into the sunlight. Lena kneels at her feet and bites her trembling lip. Ying Ying watches her, her eyes heavy with sadness.
Do you know what you want? I mean from him.
Respect. Tenderness.
Then tell him now. And leave this lopsided house. Do not come back until we give you those things. With both hands open.
Lena shakes her head as tears spill from her eyes.
I can't.
Losing him does not matter. It is you who will be found and cherished.
Ying Ying's eyes fill with tears as she gazes tenderly at her daughter. Lena rises with a faint, hopeful smile. Ying Ying kisses her on the forehead and folds her into her arms in a protective embrace. Now at the party.
So my mom sees this mirror at the foot of our bed. Oh. And she says, a mirror there is bad luck. All the romance will hit the mirror. Boom, go back the opposite direction.
So what'd you do?
We moved it.
Yeah, put that baby right on the seat. Waverly loves it.
So perfect. This guy will do anything for her.
but they're allies. Aww. But now it's getting out of hand because after the party, we're going to Lake Tahoe, and he actually asked her to come with us.
Oh, hey. She'd have a great time.
Well, choosing between the two of us, I'd rather I had the great time.
You'll have a good time.
Lena kisses Ken.
Save some room for dessert. My mom's cake is coming out, and I'm counting on you guys for 2 slices apiece.
She'll eat 5.
10.
Do I have to use chopsticks? Because it could take a while.
Anmei sits down next to her daughter, the smiling, sunny-faced Rose.
Where's Jennifer?
Oh, her Auntie June is putting her down for a nap.
Oh, I'll go check on her.
In a bedroom, June sits with a little girl.
And now the woman was old, and she had a daughter who grew up speaking only English and swallowing more Coca-Cola than sorrow.
What's sorrow?
Sadness. For a long time now, the woman wanted to give her daughter the single swan feather and tell her...
Is the swan real? Is there really a swan?
I don't know, baby. It's my mama's story.
And we can't ask her because she's dead.
Little Jennifer gazes sleepily up at June, who nods sadly, then takes a deep breath and smiles. Rose looks on from the doorway.
And the woman would tell her daughter, this feather may look worthless, but it comes from afar and carries with it all my good intentions.
What intentions?
A good intention means everything your mommy wants for you. Like blowing out candles on your birthday cake.
Rose smiles and slips away. She walks into the dining room just as Anmei sets down a large white sheet cake decorated with red flowers. Rose slips her arm affectionately through her mother's.
Like it?
It's great. It's going to be great for June. I bet the twins are in China right now dreaming about their little American sister.
Yes. But their mother, that's who they waited for all these years. They will be so sad.
They already know Auntie Linda wrote them.
Anmei heaves a troubled sigh. Now we see a flashback of her as a 9-year-old.
As a little girl, I wondered every day. Worst of all, I had to wonder in secret. I had no memory of my mother because she was kicked out of the house when I was 4 years old.
Little Anmei sits at a food-laden table, her eyes wide with fear. An elderly couple glares at Anmei's young, beautiful mother as they pound the table.
You are not my daughter. If you have any self-respect, you should kill yourself.
A tureen of steaming soup rocks precariously with each strike. Your husband just died, and you've become another man's concubine. The tureen crashes over, splashing Anmei with a scalding soup.
The scar from the soup was all I had left of my mother. My grandmother, my uncle, and my aunties, they taught me to hate her. They accused her of breaking her vow as a widow and running away to marry a rich man, who already had a wife, 2 concubines, and other children. Then one day, as my grandmother was lying in her deathbed...
The 9-year-old Anmei looks up as a slim woman in a fashionable fitted suit walks through the door. Our view trails up to the face of Anmei's mother. She puts down a suitcase and steps hesitantly across the foyer. Anmei bites her lip, her eyes wide in surprise. Confronted by her family, her mother stares straight ahead to avoid their accusing glares. If you have any dignity, leave right away. Let your mother go to heaven in peace. You are no longer her daughter. Anmei's mother ignores them all and walks slowly across the room. She searches her daughter's solemn face. Anmei stands up and stares back.
I saw my own face looking back at me.
Anmei's mother smiles sadly beneath the brim of her hat. Later, in her mother's bedroom. Wearing a brown silk shongsam and a jade bracelet around her slender wrist, she watches the old woman's labored breathing with an anguished frown. She kneels in front of a low table, which bears an earthenware soup pot, a bowl, and an ivory-handled dagger. She picks up the knife and draws it slowly from its sheath. Standing in the shadows in the back of the room, her relatives start to sob. Anmé gapes in disbelief as her mother draws the blade slowly across the inside of her upper arm. She bites her lip against the pain as thick crimson blood drips into the soup bowl.
It was an old tradition. Only the most dutiful of daughters would put her own flesh in a soup to save her mother's life.
She carries the bowl to her dying mother.
My mother did this with her whole heart, even though my grandmother had disowned her. This is how a daughter honors her mother. The pain of the flesh is nothing. The pain you must forget. This is the most important sacrifice a daughter can make for her mother.
Trembling, Anmei's silver-haired grandmother clings to her daughter's hand and struggles to raise her head off the pillow. Anmei's mother feeds her a sip of the soup, then clasps her hand tightly.
Mama, don't leave.
The old woman fights back a sob.
Mama, don't leave.
Anmei's eyes brim with tears. Later, wearing a fur-collared coat, Anmei's mother stands at the door ready to leave.
Anmei, Mama's leaving. Respect your uncle and your aunties. Remember, be obedient.
Her relatives look on as she strokes Anmei's hand.
Don't forget your mama.
Anmei's stern-faced uncle takes her other hand. If you take this child away, she will become like you, never able to face anyone.
Never able to lift her head.
Anmei's mother takes a deep breath and focuses on her tearful daughter, then smiles sadly and heads for the door.
I lost her once before. This time I took my chance before it was too late.
Anmei runs after her. You're going to ruin her whole life. They stride away, arm in arm.
Mom? Mom? Let's go.
Now in a grocery store, the present-day Anmei emerges from her reverie.
Jennifer, give the soup to Mommy. I'm afraid you'll spill it. There you go.
Rose takes an ice cream dish from her daughter.
Good girl.
Ted coming to dinner?
Why do you ask that?
You bought flour, egg, bittersweet Hershey bar, Skippy Chunky. Good for only chocolate peanut butter pie. Who else eat?
Rose puts her groceries in the car.
Well, it's not a dinner exactly. Just sort of a meeting at the house tonight.
Meeting?
Yeah, well, we both thought it was time to settle all the property stuff.
Both?
Yeah, both. Absolutely.
What are you going to ask for?
What are you talking about?
Talking about what you're worth.
Rose looks away with a troubled frown. Now a flashback to Rose as a college student.
That first afternoon he introduced himself on campus, he asked to borrow my notes. I pretended I didn't know who he was.
This is so good.
She smiles at the blonde, blue-eyed Ted.
Look at the newspaper, and they see the
article. I
don't
know why I'm saying this. I knew who you were when you came up to me. I've watched you for weeks, like all the girls watch you, and I was excited and flattered when you came on to me, so I baked you this pie, and we had dinner. Only I don't know who you are.
I know who your family is and what they do, and suddenly I'm starting to wonder whether I belong in this conversation. I don't like feeling that way.
He stares at her, fascinated.
I love you said that.
I didn't say it to impress you.
That's why I did.
Rose gazes at him with a dreamy smile. Later, at a garden party outside an elegant mansion.
His dad owned a publishing empire. His mom's family had wineries. I'd never been around people like this.
Dad, Mom?
Hi.
This is Rose Shu, my girlfriend.
The one word sent me into total shock, from which I'm afraid I've never quite recovered.
Hello.
Hi.
His parents exchange an anxious glance and force themselves to smile. Later, Ted's mother approaches Rose, who stands by herself, gazing out over the lush gardens.
Is this a private reverie, or can an old lady join you?
Sure. You and Ted haven't known each other long, have you?
Actually, no.
I've never heard him speak of you until this morning. But it's always a thrill for a mother to hear that sort of excitement in her son's voice. So I hope you won't misunderstand what I have to say.
Rose's smile fades.
I want you to know, Rose, that we're a very liberal family.
I couldn't believe what she was telling me. It was straight out of some awful racist movie like The World of Susie Wong.
Ted is going to be working with his father in the company, and he's going to be judged by people of a different standard. Publishers, authors, critics, and their wives. And they won't be as understanding as we are.
Mrs. Jordan, you sound as if Ted and I are getting married. That's hardly the case.
Oh, I know, dear. It's just that, well, the way the world is, how unpopular Vietnam was.
I'm not Vietnamese. I'm American.
Of course you are. It's just, I understand you. That's all I'm trying to say. Do you understand?
Mom.
Hello, darling. We're having a wonderful visit.
You know, I always knew you were a jerk. But shit, this is the first time in my life I am ashamed of you.
How dare you use that language? I think you better apologize right now.
I'm sorry, Mom. You made a fucking asshole out of yourself in front of the woman I love.
Rose gapes at him.
We're out of here.
Later in Rose's apartment. She and Ted hold hands over the table, gazing at each other with tender smiles.
I wasn't sorry what his mother did. How else would I have known if he hadn't rescued me, how wonderful he was, that he loved me?
Ted searches Rose's face with his wide blue eyes and softly strokes her hand. Later, wearing a dreamy smile, Rose absently rubs lotion on her hands and arms. Pale blue moonlight plays across her pink bathrobe.
In 6 months, we were married. After the wedding, the fears began to sink in, take hold. Everything I had married into, the pressure, the weight of it. I promised myself that I could handle it, that nothing, nothing could ever change me. Or us.
At a party, Rose oversees the caterer.
Wayne, could you chop this up into smaller slices? Last time they were way too big. Thanks. Also, could you dress the deviled eggs with...
At first, it was just a bunch of little things. Loving things a wife would do behind the scenes without him even knowing. You know, like paying the household bills, buying him special gifts that showed my love. The beautiful part was, he never had to ask for any of this. In fact, he never even knew.
She frowns at her reflection in a mirror.
I told myself that was the selfless way, the loving way, instead of the chicken shit way.
She takes a deep drag on a cigarette and exhales with a heavy sigh.
I was offered a fellowship in fine arts to this school I admired in Idaho. Of course, that was out of the question. The interesting part was, I never asked the question, not even of myself.
She spots Ted talking to two guests and puts on a cheery smile.
He was running two of his family's magazines now, and there were four or five business affairs each week. I was glad to help, and knew he appreciated it.
I just don't understand that at all.
Ted spills wine on the floor. Rose immediately kneels down and mops it up with a napkin.
And over time, I could see that Ted was becoming bored. We said less and less. So I tried harder. I got pregnant for the worst reason imaginable, a last attempt to hang on. Although, of course, I never thought of it that way at the time. The good news was he adored her.
Now Rose stops outside Ted's study and peeks through the glass door. His back turned, Ted sits with his feet up on the desk, sipping a drink and going over pages of notes. Rose puts on a smile.
Honey, should we eat in or out tonight?
You decide.
Well, if we eat in, I've got lamb chops. Or I could call Ernie's. Or Square One.
Whatever you want, really, it'll be great.
Ted tries a weak smile, which quickly fades.
Okay. Didn't mean to interrupt your work. I'll figure something out.
You're not interrupting me. Really, I meant what I said. I want to hear what you want.
Because I could defrost a chicken if the lamb chops are too heavy. You've had a hard day. I don't really care. I just want you to be happy.
Ted bows his head with a nervous chuckle.
Honey, what's wrong? Did I say something wrong?
It's just that once in a while, I would like to hear what you want.
What do you mean?
I mean, I'd like to hear your voice. Even if we disagree. It used to be different.
Different?
You used to have an opinion. We used to argue.
That's what you want? You want us to argue?
I want you to be here.
Honey, I'm here. I'm here for you. You just have to just tell me what you want. I told you, I'll do the chicken.
Are you happy?
Of course I am.
Ted studies her pleading gaze, then lowers his eyes to the floor. Now, on a gray, rainy day, Rose stares out a window into the garden where a patio set lies in disarray, covered with dead leaves. Across the room, Ted stands with his back turned and arms crossed.
What's her name?
Rose stares outside, refusing to look at him.
Is she beautiful?
Ted bows his head wearily and pinches the bridge of his nose.
I think that we have to sell the house, but anything that you want, any special things that you need, you let me know. I'm going to ask you to call Barry.
What's her fucking name?
What's the difference? She's not the reason.
Rose closes her eyes and shakes her head. Now, Anme hands her a completed chocolate peanut butter pie.
What you going to do with leftovers after he eat one slice?
Throw it away, I guess.
You ask yourself why you make this. Because I know, even if you don't.
I like being tragic, Ma. I learned it from you.
Anme scowls impatiently and puts down the pie.
You think he sees this pie? Now he's so sorry, take you for granted? You think this? You, the foolish one. Every time you give him gift, like begging. Take this. Oh, sorry. Please forgive me. I'm not worth as much as you. So he only take you more for granted.
She peers hopefully at Rose, who doesn't look up from her workbench.
You're just like my mother. Never know what you're worth. Until too late.
In a flashback, the 9-year-old Anme stands in the driveway of a gracious, imposing mansion and watches, wide-eyed, as a fleet of limousines pulls up to the front door. She runs to stand beside her mother, who waits in a receiving line with the servants.
When I went to live with my mother, I thought I had become so happy, so important. Then my new family returned from the countryside. Wu Qing, his other wives and children.
A husky, coarse-featured man.
Now I wondered what my place in this family would be. First wife was a ghost of a woman. She blinded herself to the faults of her daughters. Third wife never gave Wu Qing a son and lived in fear she'd be kicked out. But even she outranked my mother, who was only fourth wife, the newest one. And finally, second wife, the empress of the household, with Wu Qing's only son. I watched how my mother looked at this boy, and I wondered why.
Second wife spots on Mei and her mother and approaches them with a condescending smile.
So you've come back already. This is the daughter you wanted permission to bring? Yes, her name is An Mei.
Second wife takes off a string of pearls and places them around An Mei's neck.
Put this on.
An Mei smiles gratefully and admires her new necklace. Her mother frowns.
Second wife, this is too expensive for a small child. She's not worthy of it.
Second wife smiles at An Mei.
Who is she to say who is worthy? A treasure like you needs precious pearls to light up your face. You may call me Big Mother. Give them back. Hurry now.
An Mei.
If you don't thank Big Mother, you will make me very angry.
An Mei smiles reluctantly and bows her head.
Thank you, Big Mother.
An Mei's mother shoots a challenging stare at Second Wife, who grins triumphantly. Later, in a study.
An Mei.
An Mei, give me the necklace.
An Mei shakes her head.
I know you don't want to, but I will not have her buy you for such a cheap price.
She smashes the pearls.
That precious pearl necklace that had almost bought my mind and heart. It was made out of glass.
Why should you believe me? I have become nothing. A fourth wife. A low-class concubine.
An Mei gazes at her with a troubled frown, her eyes brimming with tears.
But An Mei, I was not always like this. I was a first wife. Your father's only wife. Never forget that. You are a daughter of a first wife.
Later, An Mei lies asleep in her mother's arms. Wu Qing shakes her mother awake.
You can't. My daughter is with me.
Then send her away. Or let her watch. She gapes at him in disbelief, then tries to smile at her daughter.
An Mei, go to your nanny's room. Please.
An Mei stares suspiciously at Wu Qing, who starts to take off his robe. She slides out of bed. Her mother covers herself with a miserable frown. Later, in the study, she finds An Mei staring into the fireplace.
An Mei?
An Mei, why are you here alone? I've been looking for you everywhere.
An Mei fingers her mother's long hair.
Is that his smell?
She gazes reproachfully at her mother.
Why did you bring me here? Nanny told me. She told me everything. You went to Westlake Temple to make offerings in memory of my father. Wu Qing saw you there. Second wife invited you over to play mahjong. That night, Wu Qing came to your room.
In a flashback, Wu Qing sneaks into her sleeping mother's room and takes off his robe. He rips the covers off and forces himself on top of her. Her mother struggles beneath his weight. Now in the study.
I told her the rest so fast, as if it would hurt her less.
In a flashback, Anmei's mother crawls on her hands and knees to her mother's doorstep. The old woman kicks her and slams the door in her face.
No one believed she was raped, not even her own mother.
Later, she arrives at Wu Qing's house, her stomach swollen.
She had nothing. No one would take her in. No one would give her work. And she was carrying Wu Qing's child. To save her baby, there was only one place she could go.
Later, servants pin her down as second wife takes her baby.
And when he was born, my little brother, second wife claimed him as her reward.
Give me back my son!
The servants let her go as second wife disappears from the room. Now, in front of the fire, Anmei's mother gazes pleadingly at her miserable daughter, who stares at the floor, tears rolling down her cheeks.
Anmei.
I stayed alive to keep my hope of seeing you again one day. So it's all true?
Anmei's mother gazes at her with heavy eyes.
I brought you here to give you a better life. But now, I know what I really have to do.
Morning. Anmei's mother lies in bed, spittle crusting the corners of her mouth. Anmei shakes her frantically.
Mama, wake up. Hurry, wake up.
They were doing nothing. Only waiting for my mother to die. Second wife told me my mother had died by accident, taking too much opium. Lies. I know my mother killed herself on purpose. She had eaten sticky sweet dumplings one after the other, filled with opium. When the poison broke into her body, she whispered to me that she would rather kill her own weak spirit so she could give me a stronger one.
Mama!
Now at her funeral, Anmei's mother lies under a gauzy white sheet.
Mama, can you see? Can you see I am no longer scared? I'm strong now. I see clearly now what's true and what's false.
Wearing a burlap funeral veil, Anmei glares at the rest of Wu Qing's family.
My mother chose the date of her death to give me the power over her enemies.
Anmei stares at her little brother, who bows his head. She darts forward, grabs his hand, and pulls him beside her.
My mother's ghost will return in 3 days to settle scores. That day will be the Lunar New Year. All debts must be paid by then, or horrible tragedies will befall you.
Wu Qing hurries to the altar and lights 2 incense sticks. Lord Buddha, forgive me.
So, on that day, Wuqing promised to revere my mother as if she had been first wife, his only wife. He promised to raise me and my mother's son as his honored children, the highest position.
Second wife steps nervously to the altar. Anmei crushes the glass pearls in her hand.
And on that day, second wife's hair began to turn white.
Mama! And on that day, I learned to shout.
Now Rose gazes tearfully at her mother.
Mom, what does it mean? What does it mean, Mommy?
I tell you the story because I was raised the Chinese way. I was taught to desire nothing, to swallow other people's misery, and to eat my own bitterness. And even though I taught my daughter the opposite, but still, she came out the same way. Maybe it is because she was born to me and she was born a girl, and I was born to my mother and I was born a girl. All of us like stairs, one step after another. Going up, going down, but always going the same way.
Anmei takes a deep, steadying breath.
I know. This cannot be. This not knowing what you're worth. This not begin with you. My mother, not to know her worth. Until too late. Too late for her. But not for me.
Anmei takes Rose's hand in hers and squeezes it, then tenderly strokes her daughter's hair.
Now, we will see. If not too late for you.
Rose smiles through her tears and heaves a deep, troubled sigh. Later, she sits outside at the patio set, oblivious to the falling rain. She stares into space, her mouth set in a determined line. Ted wanders toward her.
Rose, I'm standing out in the rain ringing the bell for 15 minutes. Are you okay?
Rose doesn't move.
Honey? Are you okay? Honey?
Get out of my house. You heard me. Get out.
Ted sighs in frustration and wipes the rain from his face.
Honey, it's our house. We agreed to sell it. That's why I'm here.
You're not taking my house. You're not taking my daughter. You're not taking any part of me. Because you don't know who I am. I died 60 years ago. I ate opium. And I died. For my daughter's sake. Now get out of my house.
Rose turns with a furious glare. Brow furrowed, Ted gazes at her, then blinks thoughtfully and crouches beside her in the wet grass.
I'm listening.
It's not your fault. None of it. I was the one who told you that my love wasn't good enough. That your love is worth more than mine. I was so full of shit.
Tears run down her cheeks, mingling with the rain. Ted bites his lip and starts to cry. Now at the party, Rose stands lost in thought, holding a plate of cake. Ted appears and samples the frosting.
It's very good.
No.
He kisses her tenderly.
Oh.
is.
Rose carries the cake over to June.
Mm. Thank you.
Sure.
They smile as they survey the crowded apartment.
So wonderful, Rosie. I mean, everybody's here.
Yeah. Your mom would have been so proud.
No meal's ever going to be the same without your mom's famous crab.
Now in a flashback.
Last Chinese New Year, we had Auntie Lindo's family to dinner. It was the last time my mom would ever cook her famous crab.
June helps Suyan carry food to the table.
Oh, John, everything all right?
June taps the old man's arm.
How is everything?
Oh, excellent. Bravo. Best quality.
Thank you. You see, best quality.
That's how my mother was. Everything had to be the best. She believed the same about me, that I could be anything. Instead, I was the biggest disappointment in my mother's life.
Waverly's daughter plays the piano with two crab claws.
Shoshana, stop playing with your food.
Waverly grins indulgently, then turns to June.
Say, didn't you play the piano once?
No, not really.
Yeah, I could have sworn.
After all these years, she was still so sneaky.
Hey, June, how your business go? Your mother tell me you busy.
It's going pretty good. Although, one of my clients seems to think that freelance means free, just because we're friends.
Waverly sighs and faces her.
Listen, June. I don't know how to tell you this, but that stuff you wrote, well, the firm decided it was unacceptable.
好了，不要多讲了。
You're lying. You said it was terrific.
I didn't want to hurt your feelings. I was trying to see if I could fix it somehow, but it just won't work.
Look, all copy needs fine-tuning. Rewrites are free, of course. I'm just as concerned about making it perfect as you are.
June, I really don't think...
Just tell me what they want to have changed. I'll give you a call next week, okay? We'll go over it, line by line.
June, I can't. It's just not, well, sophisticated. I'm sure what you do for your other clients is wonderful.
You girls.
算了.
Ma. And we are a big firm. And we need somebody who understands that. Who understands our style.
What does style have to do with it?
Oh, God. I mean, really, June. Three benefits, three needs, three reasons to buy, satisfaction guaranteed for today's and tomorrow's taxes.
That's just part of it.
Yeah, the bad part.
June glares at her. In the next room, old Chong sits at the piano. He peers around the corner into the dining room. Everyone stares curiously at him. June lowers her eyes with a hurt frown. Her mother smiles politely.
True. Cannot teach die. June not like Waverly. Must be born this way.
June glares at her mother.
I was so humiliated. Outsmarted by Waverly and betrayed by my own mother.
Later, in the kitchen, June shoots her mother a furious look as she scrapes crab shells into the garbage. Suyan loosens the collar of her dress and glances sideways at her scowling daughter.
See, you didn't touch your crab.
Like I said at dinner, not hungry.
June frowns tensely and shakes her head.
What? Still mad at Waverly?
How could I be mad at someone with all that style? It's just a shame that I wasn't born that way.
So it's me you're mad at?
No. I'm just sorry that you got stuck with such a loser. That I've always been so disappointing.
What do you mean disappoint? Piano?
Everything. My grades, my job... Not getting married. Everything you expected of me.
Not expect anything. Never expect. Only hope. Only hoping best for you. It is not wrong to hope.
No? Well, it hurts. Because every time you hope for something I couldn't deliver, it hurt. It hurt me, Mommy. And no matter what you hope for, I'll never be more than what I am. And you never see that, what I really am.
June's pretty face crumbles into tears. Suyeon gazes at her with wide, sympathetic eyes, then takes the jade necklace from around her neck and presses it into June's hand. June tries to push her away, but her mother forces her to take it.
June, since your baby time, I wear this next to my heart. Now you wear next to yours. It will help you know. I see you. I see you.
Suyeon watches her intensely, swallowing hard. June winces and bows her head, fingering her mother's necklace.
That bad crab. Only you try to take it. Everybody else want best quality. You're thinking different. Waverly took best quality crab. You took worst. Because you have best quality heart.
Her gaze never wavering from June's face, Suyeon smiles tenderly and slips the necklace around her daughter's neck. She gently tugs June's long, silky hair from beneath the chain, then cups her daughter's face in her hands and wipes the tears from her cheeks.
You have style. No one can teach. Must be born this way.
June gazes adoringly into her mother's tired, gently lined face.
I see you.
Suyeon presses her lips together, resolved not to cry. When she tries to turn away, June stops her. Holding hands, they gaze tenderly into each other's eyes. Now at the party. Everyone surrounds June as Waverly opens a bottle of champagne. The champagne bubbles over as she pours it into June's glass.
To June!
Waverly holds her thumb over the top of the bottle and showers everyone with champagne.
Thank you.
Well, take all of this love with you to China tonight.
Speech! Speech!
June shakes her head in embarrassment. Rose, Waverly, and Lena egg her on.
I've known all of you for so long. Rose, Lena, Waverly. Since we were babies and kids fighting over dolls. It's amazing, isn't it?
June smiles affectionately at her friends, then turns to her aunties.
Auntie Lindo, Auntie Ying Ying, Auntie Ame. Longtime friends of my mother. You are like second mothers to me. In so many ways. Truly.
The three older women start to cry.
I mean, you gave her back to me by finding my sisters. You've given me something I can still do for her. Here I thought it was too late. Well, it isn't.
The tension broken, everyone turns to smile at the baby. June starts to cry and reaches out for her father's hand. Her frail, gray-haired father takes it with a gentle smile. Later, she stands at the apartment door with the last of the guests.
All right. Well, good night, TC. Good night, Daisy. Yeah, you're my mom's all. Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Okay.
Carrying a tray loaded with empty glasses, June walks wearily down the hall toward the kitchen. She passes by the den. Lindo sits inside, staring at the unfinished mahjong game. June comes back and peeks in the door.
Auntie Lindo?
Lindo looks up and smiles. June walks in and sits next to her. Her aunt studies her with a somber expression.
I have something I must tell you. One little thing I forget to tell you. You know I write letter to your sisters, telling them how happy you are to find them, how happy you are you go to China to see them.
Yes, Auntie Lindo, you've already told me this.
And then I sign letter from your mother.
What? You sign the letter in my mother's name?
I try write different letter, telling them so sad, too late, mother gone, dead. But how can I write such letter? No. This is my thinking. Better hear from own sister. Important news. You only one who can...
You mean they think that she's still alive?
June gapes in shock.
You have to write back. Tell them that she's dead. I can't tell them that. Auntie Lindo, you have to write another letter.
Too late. No way to do this. You're leaving tonight. You must go, you tell them. Anyway, this best way. That's my thinking.
Lindo stubbornly juts out her chin and looks away. June stares at her in disbelief. Later, she stands in her mother's bedroom looking through faded photographs of the two of them together and with June's father.
You know, ever since Mommy died, it's like a mystery where everything is. She hides everything. Jewelry, even the fake stuff. For 3 years, she tried to tell me where she hid everything in case she died. I guess I wasn't listening. I picked some things for them. You tell me if they're okay. This one is from me.
He hands her a package.
Old photos of Mom in China. I don't need old photos for memory. I have lots. You have lots. Now they should have her. Am I right?
June nods tightly.
Maybe when they see picture of Mom so young, so beautiful, they can still remember her. Not like the way she looked when she left them.
The way she looked?
Oh, yes. Very bad dysentery. Back then, no medicine, no doctors. She almost died, you know. She never told you?
June shakes her head. Now in a flashback. Thick columns of black smoke hover over a Chinese village, partially obscuring the jagged mountain peaks that rise dramatically over the lush green landscape. Hundreds of villagers stampede down a narrow village street, some carrying small bundles, others with only the clothes on their backs. Chinese soldiers wearing beige uniforms supervise their escape, guiding them away from the smoke-blackened buildings. A young, smooth-cheeked Suyan struggles through the surge of running people, pushing a wheelbarrow that carries her babies, bundled in blankets. Her mouth set in a grim, determined line, she plows ahead, nervously eyeing the crowd of bodies shoving past her. Her two babies lie facing the sky, their heads bobbing up and down as Suyan wheels them along the bumpy road. Suyan starts muttering to herself. Blood seeps between her fingers as she grips the wheelbarrow's rough wooden handles. From above, we see the seemingly endless trail of weary refugees winding across the countryside. Keeping pace with the others, Suyan pushes her wheelbarrow past discarded possessions that litter the muddy ground. Her babies lie asleep, their eyes squeezed shut in their chubby faces. A woman with one leg limps along beside her, leaning heavily on a crutch. Suyan staggers, then slips in the mud. Her babies nearly fall out of the wheelbarrow. Our view rises slowly toward the sky. The ravaged city and dejected refugees stand out in stark contrast to the majestic landscape. From a distance, we see Suyan in tiny silhouette, her shoulders stooped and steps dragging. She stumbles and collapses, dragging the wheelbarrow down with her. The wheelbarrow lies on its side, its single broken wheel spinning uselessly. Clothes and bundles spill out onto the mud. Suyan's hair hangs in straggles. Dirt and tears smudge her face. Oblivious to the procession that continues without her, Suyan hurries to pick up her babies. She clutches them gently to her chest, patting their backs to comfort them. Suyan kneels in the mud, crying, then struggles to her feet. Her knees buckle beneath her. Leaving the wheelbarrow behind, she forces herself off the ground and staggers toward a large, spreading tree. She kneels at its base and gazes tearfully toward the sky, her sobs forming vaporous clouds in the cold air. A man carrying a suitcase walks toward her. He dismisses her with a wave of his hand and hurries away. Suyan collapses in tears, then gently lays her babies on the ground.
She thought, better not die next to my babies. Nobody saves babies with such bad luck. Who wants two babies with ghost mother following them? Very bad luck. Very.
She unwraps a colorful embroidered scarf and adds her jewelry to a small pile of jade bracelets and a string of pearls.
You know, everything she had, she left with those babies. Everything worth anything.
She unfolds a tattered yellow piece of paper covered with spidery Chinese characters.
She left a note with all her gold, promising more if babies brought to their father in Chongqing.
She adds the note to the pile, then folds the scarf into a pillow. She tucks the scarf gently behind one of her baby's heads. Suyan drags her tortured gaze from one daughter to the other as the babies lie squirming against the hard tree trunk. Suyan throws herself protectively over her children, then crawls away on her hands and knees, sobbing.
So much bad luck. Then she thought, even worse her luck. Someone safer after she left them. Put her in a truck. She woke up in the hospital screaming, wanting to die.
Clutching the pictures over her heart, June takes a deep, trembling breath and dabs at her nose.
Come, sit.
She gazes tearfully at her father, then sinks onto the bed next to him. He hands her an envelope.
One more thing. I found this in Mommy's jewelry box. I know she was saving it for you. Someday she was going to give to you. I think now. Go ahead, open. Good luck for China. See, it's a swan feather.
Swan feather?
She decided she couldn't give that feather to you, not yet. She didn't think you would understand.
Well, I guess I was never very good at listening to her.
No. She thought she wasn't worthy enough. Mother, to give it to you.
June stares at him in surprise.
Worthy enough for me?
Because she gave up hope about her other daughters. How can she show you how to hope big when she had lost hope? A mother can never give up her hope for her own children. Never.
Never.
But she never did. On the day you're born, she transferred all her hope to you, all hope from those babies.
She transferred all her hopes to me.
Mine, too.
Oh, I love you, Daddy.
June and her father embrace in a tight, clinging hug.
I will tell them. This feather may look worthless, but it comes from afar and carries with it all my good intentions.
Now, standing on the deck of a ferry, June stares thoughtfully into space with a soft smile. She holds the white swan feather in her hands. She tucks the feather carefully into her purse and takes a deep, determined breath. Now, June joins the other disembarking passengers and walks down the gangplank. Carrying two suitcases, she searches the sea of smiling faces that crowds the dock. Some people hold up name cards written in Chinese characters, while others wave to their arriving friends and relatives. June maneuvers through the crowd, a worried frown growing on her face. She scans the dock, while all around her, people greet their loved ones. A young woman runs toward her. June's smile fades as she rushes past and hugs a girl behind her. Suddenly, June stops short. Her eyes grow wide. Two middle-aged women stand several yards away. The image of her mother as a young woman smiles through the crowd. A passerby blocks her view. In a flash, her mother is gone, replaced by a stranger. The two women look from June to a photograph they hold in their hands. June gulps. She heaves a deep, nervous sigh as the women's hopeful smiles fade, then steps forward to meet them. From overhead, we see the sisters move through the crowd to face each other. June puts down her bags, her lips parted in a troubled frown. The two women watch her, puzzled. June looks helplessly from one sister to the other.
Mama's gone to heaven.
They gape in disbelief.
Gone? Mama's dead? When? 4 months ago.
The sisters bow their heads in anguish.
I'm so sorry.
She loved you very much. I'm your sister, June. Our little sister. I've come to take our mother's place. I've come to bring you her hopes. Our sister.
The women smile through their tears.
Our family.
The sisters rush to embrace her. Elated, June starts to laugh.
It was enough for them and for me. Because really, she was there. And I'd finally done something for her. I'd found the best of myself, what she kept for all of us. Her long-cherished wish.
Our view floats over the crowded dock as June's sisters introduce her to their husbands and children. They pose for a photograph. Then, surrounded by her family, June shakes hands and chats excitedly with her newfound relatives. The scene fades to black. This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, a service of the WGBH Educational Foundation. Funding provided by the United States Department of Education. Described by Leslie Wu Foley. Descriptions read by Peter Haidu and Rena Baskin. Now in the photograph from June's party, June stands alone as Waverly, Lena, and Rose pose with their mothers. The photo dissolves into another, with Suyan joining the group, her arms around June's waist. Credits appear. The mothers, Qiu Qin as Suyan, Tai Qin as Lindo, France Nguyen as Yingying, Lisa Liu as An Mei. The daughters, Ming-Na Won as June, Tamlin Tomito as Waverly, Lauren Tom as Lena, Rosalind Chow as Rose. Chow Lin Chi as June's father, Melanie Chang as June, age 9, Victor Wong as Old Chong, Lisa Connolly as the singing girl, Vu Mei as Waverly, age 6 to 9, Ying Wu as Lindo, age 4, Mei Yuan Chi as Lindo's mother, Guo Rong Chen as Huan Tai Tai, Shi Ying Li as the matchmaker, Irene Eng as Lindo, age 15, William Gong as Xuyan Yu, Shi Xiang Xia as Huang Tai Tai's servant, Dan Yi as the servant's boyfriend, Christopher Rich as Rich, Nicholas Guest as the hairdresser, Jason Yi as Waverly's brother, Samantha Haw as Shoshana, Yi Fei Hong as Yingying, age 16 to 25, Russell Wong as Lin Chao, Grace Chang as Lin Chao's opera singer, Michael Paul Chan as Harold, Philip Moon as Ken, Melissa Tan as Jennifer, Yi Ding as An Mei, age 9, Emmy Yu as An Mei, age 4, Vivian Wu as An Mei's mother, Lucille Sung as Pupo, Yu Ming Chong as An Mei's uncle, Fun Tian as Auntie Number 1, Lena Chow as Auntie Number 2, Jeannie Lee Wu as Auntie Number 3, Andrew McCarthy as Ted, Jack Ford as Mr. Jordan, Diane Baker as Mrs. Jordan, Tian Ming Wu as Wu Qing, Elizabeth Sung as second wife, Shen Yu Ma as Suyan's twin daughter number 1, Shen Wei Ma as Suyan's twin daughter number 2. The producers wish to thank China Film Company Production Corporation, People's Republic of China, Evelyn's Antiques, Michael Morell, Berkeley Mill and Furniture Company, Jean Agres, Chinatown Resource Center, Chinese Historical Society of America, Northwest Airlines, Shanghai Film Studio, City of San Francisco, and the City of Berkeley. Soundtrack available on Hollywood Records. Copyright 1993, Buena Vista Pictures Distribution, Incorporated. All rights reserved. This motion picture was created by the Joy Luck Company for purposes of copyright law in the United Kingdom. Distributed by Buena Vista Pictures Distribution, Incorporated.
Now a logo appears, with a glowing blue moon rising behind a golden sphinx. Hollywood Pictures.